Hello, everyone, and welcome to another expert interview at the Innovation and Creativity Summit 2017. Very to have Dr. Ralf Christian Ohr with us today, who's the founder of Integrative Innovations and a specialist in the concept of dual innovation, which is what we're going to be talking about today. Dr. Ralf Christian, it's wonderful having you here.
Thank you, Nick. Thanks for having me, and I'm really happy to contribute to this great event, the Creativity and Innovation Summit.
No problem. Now, for people who don't know you or the sort of work that you've been doing, can you give us a bit of a background as to where you started and how you got into innovation?
Yeah, sure. I'm actually German. My background is a graduated physicist, and I'm basically living and working for more than 13 years here in Switzerland. So, and I've been working in different corporate functions like corporate development, innovation management, and first on more on the technical side and the product management. Later on, in the more on the corporate side, meaning building up corporate innovation capabilities, strategy development, and so on and so forth. And yeah, I discovered that the conceptual work is very exciting, and many companies have in common that they lack some conceptual thinking on the innovation side. So, and that brought me up into the innovation field as well.
And what we're going to be speaking about today is primarily around something you're known as a bit of a specialist as, which is the concept of ambidextrous organizations and dual innovation. Can you give us a background as to what that is at its simplest level?
Sure. I mean, ambidextrous innovation, or also referred to as organization ambidexterity, or we coined the term dual innovation because it's a little bit more handy, so to speak. It's basically traditionally companies have tried to tackle incremental or sustaining innovation and more radical or disruptive innovation with one common approach. So, and it has turned out that this doesn't work very well. And so a different approach would be you basically choose a dedicated approach for the incremental and sustaining stuff on the one side, and another one, or a dedicated one, for the more radical or disruptive stuff, meaning basically innovating the core business on the one side, and exploring and scaling the newer stuff, or the more explorative innovation on the other side. So, and with some special overlap, of course, between the two fields. So this is the basic concept.
And I notice you used two words there, which we're probably going to hear again and again. It's explore and exploit. What do you mean by that?
I mean, exploit. You can consider this with regard to commercialization, for example. You really have to make money to capture value out of these innovations. So this is the exploitation part. So this is important. It's to gain cash, to capture value. On the other side, it's more the value creation, I would say. So the initial part of the innovation process, to think about new things, new stuff, sometimes from the scratch. And but then you immediately have to think about how can I get this explorative stuff over to the exploitation. And then you have this what I described previously, this kind of overlap, or the middle ground, where you have to integrate both fields, so to speak.
And is exploration and exploitation just fitting in with the type of innovation you're trying? So if you're doing incremental or sustaining innovation, which is very similar to the sort of products you've been developing for the last couple of years, decades, 100 years, whatever your company is, is that always exploitation? And then the future stuff, the more breakthrough stuff, is that always exploration, or is it not that cut and dry, not that clear?
I mean, one dimension you can think about is let's say, let's call it time to impact. So usually there is some relation between short time to impact and the more exploitation part or incremental part. Because you could imagine that let's say, developing another type of an existing product takes much takes less time than to build up a completely new business model, for example. So there is some relation, but I actually prefer not to think in terms, or just to think in terms of time to impact, but more generic in terms of, let's say, step width or proximity with regard to the point of reference of the existing core business. You know, it's, let's imagine you have a business unit manager with an existing business, and you are forced to innovate. You usually just keep the stuff that you know you can make money out of it, or what you can bring to the market within your given KPIs, for example, operational KPIs. So you wouldn't probably pursue very explorative innovations or stuff, and that's the mismatch most companies are struggling with today, and where you have to think about whether the existing innovation system of corporations functions well enough to cover these basically equally important types of innovation. So and that's I think that's the main topic about dual innovation you have to solve.
Now, right at the beginning, you mentioned that a lot of companies approach all types of innovation in the same way. So they try and innovate incrementally and sustainably in the same way that they innovate the sort of future breakthrough products. I think a lot of the lot of the people listening would like to just get a bit more detail on what you mean by that. What are companies actually doing wrong?
Sure. I mean, a good example is the commonly employed linear innovation process, or also referred to as stage gate process, for example. You have a defined sequence of stages and gates. So this is normally used in most companies. And so many companies try to feed this process with different types of innovation. So, and normally in the stage gate, one of the first gates cover covers the economic viability of innovation. So this works well for, let's say, the known field. So if you move within a field you already know, so for example a portfolio expansion, a new version of an existing product, so you know your market, you basically know your customers, and you have a kind of you have a kind of guess what the forecast could be, what the numbers could be later on. So and then it's pretty much straightforward. But if you have really really new explorative stuff, such as building up new business model, for example. So for this, you basically start from the scratch. You have to create a market. There is no market yet. So and so the whole process, the whole system doesn't fit with this kind of innovation. So and you really have to tackle this end of the spectrum a little bit different.
And that's where this concept of dual innovation comes in. So what is dual innovation? Can we go into a bit more detail about how that works?
Sure. My understanding is basically you have two basically two playing fields. You have a playing field, you have to extend your core business, you have to develop your core, existing core business, meaning innovating within operational units, extending an existing operation model, for example, by adding additional sales channels, by adding new products, by making changes in the supply chain, for example. But this is still the existing operating model. So, and this would be one field. The other field is really to build up new stuff. That means incubating with dedicated vehicles, for example, incubators, accelerators, some kind of labs. When we look at the whole digitalization, so these are incubation vehicles, I would say, and you really try to start in new products, new business models, new technologies, and so these are the, let's say, the dual playing fields, basically, but they are not completely isolated, because dual innovation is very much about a proper balance between separating these two playing fields, or these different types of innovation, but also sufficiently integrating them, meaning that these exploratory innovations are also allowed to leverage existing assets and competences from the existing core business, because this gives them an edge to scale up later on. And this is also, I would say, a huge advantage of corporations compared to standalone startups when it comes to exploratory innovation.
And how do you create these two playing fields? Is it about creating one division within a company, a startup lab, an incubator, a sort of place where all they do is try out new things and experiment and innovate? Or is it trying to bring it as part of the jobs that people do on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, there is no one size fits all, or no recipe, but I would say it also depends on the degree of the innovation. I mean, what we have learned from Clayton Christensen, and I think he's definitely right on this one, is if you would like to build up entirely new business models, so the worst place is within an existing business model. That means you have to kind of separate out these activities in terms of space. Yeah, you have to have a dedicated space. You have to have a dedicated budget. You have dedicated full-time resources. I'm in the opinion that if you really want to drive new things, you have to rely on full-time resources. Many companies try it with part-time resources beside the daily business. But you can imagine that, I mean, startups, they have full-time resources. And if you want to compete with them, then you also have to think about putting in full-time resources to building it up as quickly as possible with the highest intensity. And so I think you have to consider every individual company. So they have some already, or probably some structures in place, but I think it's basically a good start to think about a dedicated space with a dedicated budget and dedicated personnel to really drive these new things, a little bit protected from the core business and from the daily operations. So, in order to get it incubated, to get it growing, and to prevent it from dying too soon or too early.
And are they going to be focused on all of the innovation for the company, or just this more breakthrough stuff, the exploration stuff that you alluded to earlier?
I think these kind of structures, they are really dedicated to more explorative stuff, because the more incremental stuff, it makes sense to drive this out of the existing operation units, because that's their home turf, that's where the know-how resides, and so I think it really has to be separated, yeah, but also with a kind of overlap in order to have a kind of exchange in terms of capabilities, in terms of know-how, in terms of assets, and but that's what I said. It's a critical balance between separating the innovation activities and integrating them. And I think there is no recipe, but there are some levers where you can have a look. So how you can build it up, so to speak.
You talked earlier on about the life cycle, the stage gate process that a lot of companies try to force on all of the projects, including the ones where it doesn't really fit. So are you suggesting that for these innovation, breakthrough innovation focused parts of the company, that they have other sort of ways of managing innovation? Have you got any advice for companies on how they can do that, how they can manage progress and measure progress?
Sure. I mean, I think both types of innovation, they require dedicated environments with regard to the right persons, the right mentality, the right measures, the right vehicles or instruments. So, what is the stage gate more for the exploitative part, for example? This can be a design thinking or lean startup approach, which is quite common at the moment for the early parts of exploratory innovation, and where it gets challenging then is if you try to transition the early ventures towards the core business, or to commercialize it, to exploit it, and that's where you have to link these two parts, and that's where it gets challenging and difficult,
I know, yeah.
because you have to, I think it's intuitively clear, you have to combine two different worlds with regard to performance indicators, with regard to culture, different cultures, different processes, different approaches. So, and that's the middle part, and that's basically also the link to another concept, the three horizons, what you've been talking earlier with other people. And this is the middle ground, so the horizon two, where it's really get difficult, and what probably is the most important part in the whole setup.
Yeah, we had a discussion with Paul Hopcroft around the Three Horizons framework, and he also said the Horizon 2, where it's not just the incremental innovation to business as usual, and it's not just the really forward-looking future problems. It's the
Exactly.
innovation where you're actually having to transition it into the business. And it's different enough from what's gone previously, but it's actually having to happen. That's when a lot of companies struggle, and it's this challenge of integrating, as you said, the new business models, the new products, the new offerings back into the business. That's going to determine whether or not this dual innovation is successful or not. So
Exactly.
do you have advice on how companies can prepare for the challenge of integration? and what sort of things are going to either prevent it working or really help it working?
I mean, what we are currently doing is I'm doing this together with a partner, Frank Mathis. We have established a kind of what we call a scaling up initiative. So this intends to tackle this scaling up of new ventures and the transition towards the core business. And so the basic thinking model for this is, and that's what basically is happening in the Horizon 2. If you try to move the Horizon 3 ventures towards the Horizon 1, so you have to cross the Horizon 2. And the thinking model basically is, you also have to rely on a suitable process for this. So this will most probably not be a pure lean startup process, for example, or something like this, because that's what you usually use in the front end or in the Horizon 3. This will also not be a pure stage gate or a linear process, or this will be something in between. So, and to connect the Horizon 3 with the Horizon 1. So this is so it's a process issue with suitable milestones. And the other dimension is so it's you have to think about what we call areas of tension. So you can imagine if you have two opposing worlds, the Horizon 1, meaning the core business with the existing structures, with everything very plannable, very established on one side, and on the other side, the new venture, very agile, very flexible, completely different culture, completely different leadership required. So if you now try to combine these two worlds or to connect these two worlds, you immediately run into what we call areas of tensions with regard to a leadership stream or a culture stream or a key performance indicator stream, so the matrix stream, and so on and so forth. And these areas, they have to be mapped onto the process to cover this issue well. And that's what we are currently trying to do by setting up a dedicated initiative. We're trying to get leading companies on board for this, and we're I would say well on track at the moment. And so we will try to really build a kind of scaling up capability for this Horizon 2 issue together with the companies.
Dr. Ralf Christian, it's been wonderful speaking with you so far. We're coming up to the end of the interview, but one thing I like to ask all the experts is if you've got one piece of advice or one tip for anyone who's interested in trying this concept out that you can do very quickly in an afternoon or over the next week, what would you recommend that this person try out?
I think I would give the recommendation to do a kind of gap analysis. I mean, I've been asked by many people, so which types of innovation should we tackle, should we pursue, and should we do the incremental innovation, should we do more disruptive innovation? And I always say, well, it depends. I mean, look at your core business, how it evolves, so, and then compare it with your objective. So over time, so, and then you immediately will see, is there a gap or isn't there a gap? And if you don't have a gap, so you basically don't need to innovate. But normally the companies do have a gap, and a large gap over time. So it's spreading, so the gap, and then you immediately have to think how much contribution from the innovation do I need over time? So in 1 year, in 2 years, even in 5 or 10 years. And this will lead you to think about, do I need more the incremental innovation, or do I need the disruptive radical innovation, or do I need both? And so this is a kind of basic strategy exercise.
Lovely.
Good to start with.
Perfect. We're going to get links down to all of your resources and websites below the video here. Can you just let people know what they can find at those sites?
Oh, well, first site we will refer to is my blog, of course. I think it's well known and even awarded by your initiative. Thank you, by the way. So it's integrative innovation. Basically, it covers many issues and topics around dual innovation. So all of the people interested in that should have a look at my blog. And the other website is it's up since today, since for a couple of hours basically. It's dualinnovation.net. So it's really a little bit more focused on the dual innovation part. So how can companies go about dual innovation? How can it be implemented? Because I think we shouldn't discuss any longer whether it's necessary or required. We should be more focused on how it gets implemented properly. And we try to give some advice and some support on this. And companies and people who are really interested in implementing this concept in their organization, they should definitely have a look at this site.
Perfect. It's been wonderful speaking with you, and I look forward to speaking again with you soon.
Thank you, Nick. Thank you for having me.
Congratulations on being part of the Innovation and Creativity Summit. I'm sure that if you continue to watch the other expert interviews, you will experience an improvement in your capability to turn your ideas into something valuable. But don't forget, to get the very best experience and ensure you don't miss any of the priceless lessons, you should invest in yourself with the All Access Pass. Not only will this give you exclusive lifetime access to watch all the lessons whenever is best for you, you will also get all the interviews as downloadable audio files so you can learn on the go, full transcripts so you can read and analyze the great advice and tips, and exclusive bonuses not available to anyone else. Click the link below to get your All Access Pass now.